Welcome to the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com, your daily morning podcast, updating you on everything you need to know to win your fantasy baseball league. Here's your host, Jake Crumpler.
What's up, fantasy managers? Welcome back to another episode of the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. My name is Jake Crumpler, and I'll be your host for this edition of the pod. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler and can find all of my work at CrumplerBaseball.com. Let's dive into everything baseball related from Tuesday, August 4th. We'll start it off, as always, with the transactions, injuries, news, and notes from around the league, kicking things off with the bad news as outfielder James Wood was placed on the 10-day IL with an oblique strain. The strain is labeled mild, so Wood could miss just 2 weeks, but obliques typically have a timeline of 4 to 6 weeks for return, so the Nationals could be without their best hitter for quite a while. Outfielder Andrew Pinckney was selected from the minors in a corresponding move. He's a 25-year-old right-handed hitter who at AAA has batted .271 with 13 homers, 18 steals, and a 101 WRC plus. And he's somebody who has struggled with strikeouts, striking out 31% of the time. But Pinckney will see time at designated hitter and left field against left-handed pitchers, while Dylan Cruz mans right field in Wood's absence, allowing Jacob Young and Dalen Lyle to get more consistent playing time in the outfield. Another IL placement, another one of the best hitters in baseball landing on the IL. First baseman Nick Kurtz to the 10-day IL with a thumb sprain. It's a pretty significant strain too, so Kurtz is likely to miss multiple weeks. And with the A's current standing in the standings, it's increasingly likely that Kurtz is out for the rest of the season. I wouldn't say that just yet. I feel like he's going to be out for at least a 3 to 4 weeks or so. Third baseman Max Muncy was recalled from the minors in a corresponding move. And the A's have sort of soured on Max Muncy. So after opening the season as the starting third baseman, he'll be limited to the short side of a third base platoon in this round on the roster. Jeff McNeil will handle first base duties against right-handed pitchers, but he'll head to the bench against southpaws with Tommy White shifting to first base, opening up the hot corner for Muncy. With McNeil seeing more time at first base, Donovan Walton will continue to see more chances to start at second base for the A's, splitting duties with Jonathan Ornelas. And lastly, starting pitcher Jeffrey Springs was placed on the 15-day IL with hip discomfort. Springs' timeline is unclear, but he's likely to miss about the minimum time. Starting pitcher JT Ginn was activated from the 15-day IL in a corresponding move after missing the minimum time with a blister on his finger. He started in Cincinnati. Ginn tossed 6 innings, allowing 5 hits with 3 earned runs, 2 walks, and 5 strikeouts, inducing 11 whiffs with 27% CSW across 91 pitches. And Ginn finally got his velo back to sitting north of 93 miles per hour, but the blister that sent him to the IL was clearly affecting his feel for his secondaries, as changeups, sliders, and cutters combined for just 48% strikes. That's usually the concern you have with blisters, and that doesn't bode well for Ginn's future starts, nor does his reliance on 13 sinker called strikes to secure a poor quality start on Tuesday. And I'd be nervous starting JT Ginn in Boston in his next scheduled start. In terms of transactions, we have a little bit of fallout from the trade deadline. If you wanted a breakdown of every single trade that occurred on the deadline day, make sure to listen to yesterday's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. It was August 4th. I was up all night doing that one, but let's talk about the transactions from Tuesday. Starting pitcher Quinn Matthews was optioned to the minors by the Cardinals, and he looked really promising in his big league debut, but Hunter Dobbins pitched into the 7th inning on Tuesday, and the Cardinals will let Dobbins stick in the rotation instead of Matthews, though. I expect Matthews to be back at some point this season. It may not be until September, though. Infielder Cesar Prieto was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move, clock in my brain, because Matthews is a pitcher and Prieto is an infielder, and he will be a backup utility infielder for the Cardinals. Next, outfielder Eddies Leonard was selected from the minors. He is a 25-year-old right-handed hitter, and at AAA, he's batted .272 with 16 homers, 8 steals, and a 125 WRC plus. He'll be in the majors with the Giants on the short side of a left field platoon, which means that the pair of left-handed hitting outfielders, Grant McCray and Drew Gilbert, will split time switching off, heading to the bench to allow Leonard to get in the lineup against left-handed pitchers. Next third baseman, Brendan Donovan, was activated from the 10-day IL after missing 2.5 months with a groin strain. Donovan will be on the strong side of a third base platoon for the Mariners, splitting time with Weston Wilson, as outfielder Stuart Fairchild was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. Next, starting pitcher J.P. Sears was optioned to the minors by the Padres to make room in the rotation for deadline additions Robbie Ray and Casey Mize. To open another spot in that rotation, Griffin Canning is expected to shift to the bullpen, but definitely some upgrades there over J.P. Sears and Griffin Canning with Robbie Ray and Casey Mize. Next, the most exciting move from yesterday, shortstop George Lombard Jr. was selected from the minors. He was the 26th overall pick in 2023. He's the number 20 prospect in baseball, and he's the number one prospect in the Yankees farm system. The 21-year-old right-handed hitting Lombard has played in the Complex League, AA and AAA this year, batting .284 with 12 homers, 14 steals, and a 140 WRC plus, while displaying some pretty impressive plate discipline, 17% walk rate with a 21% strikeout rate. Lombard will take over as the club's everyday shortstop, and he should be rostered everywhere, and he made savvy fantasy managers look pretty good as he homered in his debut. Shortstop Anthony Volpe was optioned to the minors in a corresponding move. The Yankees also optioned outfielder Jason Dominguez to the minors to make room for deadline acquisition Elliot Ramos. Next, relief pitcher Jeffrey Yan was recalled from the minors by the Mets. He's known for his eccentric strikeout celebrations in the minors and in Japan, where after strikeouts, he would squat all the way down and then jump as high as he can and pump his fist. It's pretty exciting. I'm excited to see what he can do in the majors, because not only does he have these electric strikeout celebrations, but he's been pretty great in the minors. 29-year-old Southpaw Jeffrey Yan at AA and AAA, 3.24 ERA, 44% strikeout rate. He just needs to work on his control, because he's walked 16% of the batters he's faced. The Mets also made a bunch of other call-ups into their bullpen to replace the guys that they traded away. They recalled reliever Chase McDermott from the minors, who they acquired from the Dodgers at the deadline. They selected the contract of Nate Lavender, who's a Southpaw who was taken in the Rule 5 draft by the Rays, but returned to the Mets before the season. At low A, high A, and triple A, Nate Lavender has pitched to a 3.77 ERA with a 40% strikeout rate and a single digit walk rate. So pretty promising numbers there from Nate Lavender. They also activated reliever Deadniel Nunez from the 60-day IL. He's missed all season recovering from Tommy John surgery, which he underwent back in July of 2025. And that was a shortened season for Nunez. But in 2024, Deadniel Nunez was honestly one of the most promising pitchers in baseball, relief pitchers, that is. 2.31 ERA, 0.91 WHIP, 36% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate. So if he can recover that form post-surgery, Nunez will be one of the top relievers in the Mets bullpen. They also recall reliever Xavion Curry from the minors. Next, starting pitcher Brandon Sproat was optioned to the minors by the Brewers. He struggled to a 5.27 ERA in 21 outings this year, and his demotion will make room for deadline acquisition Dustin May to join the Brewers rotation. Next, catcher Augustin Ramirez was recalled from the minors by the Marlins. He opened the season as the Marlins starting catcher, but he struggled to an 83 WRC plus and was optioned to AAA, where he posted an unspectacular 101 WRC plus. But with Liam Hicks dealt to the Rays at the deadline, Augustin Ramirez will return to the majors to give the Marlins a third catcher behind Joe Mack and Brian Navarrete. Ramirez should also see some time at designated hitter and first base, mostly against left-handed pitchers. In other catcher news, Ben Rortvedt was selected from the minors by the Dodgers. He was acquired from the Mets at the deadline, and with both Will Smith and Dalton Rushing on the injured list, Rortvedt will see a lot of time behind the plate for the Dodgers, possibly splitting opportunities with fellow deadline acquisition Hunter Fiducia. Catcher Chucky Robinson was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. And speaking of Dalton Rushing, he underwent an MRI that revealed a slight tear of his UCL in his throwing elbow. He'll be shut down from throwing for 4 to 6 weeks, and the club is uncertain if Rushing will return to being a catcher this year. However, he could be a useful bat in the postseason. Next, second baseman Adam Frazier was activated from the 10-day IL by the Angels after missing nearly 2 months with elbow inflammation. He'll be the backup second baseman in LA, but most importantly, catcher Moises Ballesteros was recalled from the minors. He was a deadline acquisition, one of the most promising players acquired by the Angels at the deadline. He will be the everyday DH for the Angels, as former everyday DH Jorge Soler was designated for assignment. The Angels likely looked for a suitor for a trade at the deadline, but couldn't find one for Jorge Chase Allaire. And that makes a lot of sense because he's batted just 187 with a 68 WRC plus after a hot April. So Jorge Soler off the 40-man roster for the Angels, but Ballesteros will be their everyday DH moving forward. In other Angels news, reliever Ben Joyce was activated from the 60-day IL after missing all season recovering from shoulder surgery, which he underwent in April of 2025. Joyce didn't look spectacular during his rehab process, and he never claimed the closer role even prior to surgery, but he's always been destined to be the closer with his triple-digit heat. And right now, Joyce's only competition is Sam Bachman and Sammy Natera Jr. So he may be the favorite for saves in Anaheim, though he is going to have to earn some trust in high leverage situations for the Angels. And Joyce is going to likely be eased into action as he returns to full health. Next, shortstop Bobby Witt Jr. was activated from the 10-day IL after missing nearly 2 weeks with back tightness. Witt will return to being the Royals' everyday shortstop as shortstop Andrew Velasquez was designated for assignment in a corresponding move. And in other Royals news, reliever Matt Strom was also designated for assignment. That one's pretty surprising given what the Royals had to give up to get Strom in the offseason. They traded Jonathan Bolin to the Phillies, and Bolin has emerged as one of the best relievers in baseball this year, definitely one of the best relievers on the Phillies, and he honestly would have been the closer for the Royals if he had stuck around, but the return that they got is a guy that now is removed from the 40-man roster, so that's not the best look for the Royals. Reliever Jose Cuas was recalled for the minors in a corresponding move. Next, outfielder Mickey Moniak signed a 2-year, $16.25 million extension with the Rockies. The deal buys out his final year of arbitration and his first year of free agency. So Mickey Moniak sticking around with the Rockies for an extra season. Next, outfielder Hector Rodriguez was recalled from the minors. Rodriguez is the Reds' number 3 prospect. He's a 22-year-old left-handed hitter who at AAA has batted .274 with 27 homers and a 123 WRC+. So some big power there from Rodriguez. He's going to be on the strong side of a right field platoon with Noel V. Marte. He's somebody that I'm certainly interested in deeper leagues, especially if that power translates to the majors. That's Hector Rodriguez of the Reds. Next, starting pitcher Cade Povich was recalled for the minors to start versus the Angels for the Orioles. He tossed 6 shutout innings, allowing 7 hits and 1 walk while striking out 7. He induced 11 whiffs with 31% CSW across 88 pitches. And Povich did a decent job of keeping 4 seamers upstairs with changeups and curveballs low, while sliders and sinkers took care of left-handed batters. I like Povich's deep arsenal and his choice to sort of split his arsenal versus the different battedness that he's facing. And he does have decent movement on all of his pitches as well. It really all depends on Povich's ability to command them and pull off that Blake Snell blueprint, that bunk bed approach with fastballs upstairs and breakers low. And if he can do that, Povich has swatch potential. He replaces Dean Kramer in the Orioles rotation, so he should be sticking around. And lastly, outfielder Christian Franklin was recalled for the minors by the Orioles. He was a deadline acquisition in a minor trade from the Nationals. The 26-year-old right-handed hitter has batted .249 with 6 homers, 17 steals, and a 101 WRC plus at AAA. He's also displayed impressive plate discipline, walking 15% of the time. Franklin replaces Taylor Ward in the Orioles outfield on the short side of a left field platoon. And in terms of news, starting pitchers Steven Kolek and Lewinder Avila will undergo Tommy John surgery. Definitely terrible news all around there. Steven Kolek and Lewinder Avila will miss the remainder of the 2026 season and all of the 2027 campaign. Big blow to the Royals there. We have some returnees from injury, though, as starting pitcher Cody Bradford is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL today to start versus the Giants. Bradford has been recovering from an internal brace procedure that he underwent last June. So Cody Bradford returning to the Rangers rotation versus the Giants on Wednesday. Next, shortstop Angel Janao is expected to be recalled from the minors today by the Guardians. He's the Guardians' number 2 prospect, and he's the number 39 prospect in all of baseball. The 22-year-old switch-hitting Janao has batted .299 at AA and AAA with 11 homers, 11 steals, and a 130 WRC+. He's walked 14% of the time while striking out 16% of the time, and that's honestly pretty Cleveland-coded. He's got the power speed, the switch hitting, and the impressive plate discipline and contact skills, and that really fits a mold that we've seen in Cleveland, and I think Ganao is going to be something. I don't know if it's Ganao or Janao, but either way, he should be a significant contributor to this Guardians lineup. I don't know where he's going to play, though. We could see Chase DeLauter move away from the DH role he's been partaking in recently, which could open up an infield spot for Janao if we see a current infielder move to the DH role, or maybe Janao is the one who is in the DH role moving forward. But definitely an exciting call up there in Cleveland. And lastly, starting pitcher Jackson Jobe is expected to be activated from the 60-day IL on Saturday to start versus the Giants. He is returning from Tommy John surgery, which he underwent last June. Now we can take a look at our notable performances from Tuesday, a day in which we had a full slate of 15 games. We'll start it off with our hitters, leading off with outfielder Willier Abreu, who helped the Red Sox to a win against the White Sox, going 2-for-4 with two home runs batted in, and a walk for good measure. He's up to 19 homers now. The first one went 430 feet at 107 miles per hour, and the second one went 419 feet at 105 miles per hour. Willier Abreu's above average 110 WRC plus is tied with 2025 for the lowest mark of his career, but that can be blamed on him having taken his most career at-bats against left-handed pitchers, which in my opinion is actually a good thing because it's allowed Abreu to produce more volume as an everyday player who avoids being platooned. And it's very hard to complain with what Willier Abreu has done so far this year, batting 251, 19 homers, 6 steals, and a 776 OPS, which is supported by his 12% barrel rate and a career-low 21% strikeout rate. If Abreu could figure out how to pull the ball more often, something that he's done more often in years past but has done at a career-low rate this year, I think he'll be able to tap into even more power. And lastly, second baseman Oslavis Basabe did all he could, but the Giants lost in Texas against the Rangers. He went 1-for-5 with a run, a home run, and 2 runs batted in. He's up to 3 homers now. This one traveled 377 feet at 100 miles per hour. Basabe was just promoted for his MLB debut on July 28th, and he didn't make his first start until August 1st. So he's made 4 starts now in his career, Basabe has, and he's hit 3 home runs already. And with Luis Arias dealt to the Phillies at the deadline and Casey Schmidt on the injured list, Basabe is locked into everyday playing time at second base. However, the power is a surprise as he's topped out at 14 homers in the minors. And this year he batted just 268 with 5 homers and a 95 WRC plus at AAA. So it's hard to believe that Basabe's power surge is sustainable, though I'd be willing to ride the hot streak in deeper leagues where his playing time makes him more viable. But if you'd like a breakdown of other notable hitting performances from Tuesday, check out the Daily Batters Box article over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the mound and check out some notable starting pitching performances, opening with Ryan Gusto, who did all he could, but the Marlins lost in Atlanta. He tossed 6 innings, allowing 5 hits and 1 run, walking nobody while striking out 5, inducing 11 whiffs with 27% CSW across 83 pitches. And Gusto completed the 6th inning for the first time. He actually pitched into the 6th inning for the first time this year. And it's looking like the Marlins will be letting Gusto stretch out. However, I'm not totally sold. He increased his fastball usage north of 40% as he found an extra tick of velocity to sit 95 miles per hour with the four seamer. But Gusto watched it lose 3 inches of IVB, which is very concerning. It could be a product of leaving the domed Miami Stadium, but it's a terrible sign. Not only is that a much more hittable pitch, but that means that if that IVB is there to stay, he's not somebody that we can trust on the road. And if it doesn't fully recover at home, then we don't want to start him there either. And I think Gusto was lucky to get away with 10 foul balls and 7 outs on 8 balls in play with the four-seamer looking so hittable like it did, with an unwieldy changeup failing to put away left-handed batters and cutters sitting comfortably in the zone working to neutralize left-handed batters. Gusto produced plenty of weak contact, but his kitchen sink approach with a poorly shaped fastball doesn't appear destined for success, even versus the Angels next. And lastly, we have Ryan Weathers, who helped the Yankees to win against the Cardinals, tossing 6 shutout innings, allowing 4 hits and 1 walk while striking out 6. He induced 9 whiffs with 35% CSW across 88 pitches. And Weathers has struggled with volatile performances since mid-May, allowing 4 or more runs in 7 starts since then. But I've loved his approach recently, as Weathers has recognized the hittability of his heaters that led to an influx of homers during that rough stretch. So he's started to emphasize his excellent secondary pitches, focusing on changeups, sweepers, and sliders instead of hittable sinkers and four-seamers. Not only has Weathers curbed that home run issue, he served up only 1 long ball across his last 8 starts, but Weathers has also allowed just allowed one run or fewer in four of his last five starts. After urging fantasy managers to drop Ryan Weathers in June, I'm now urging them to pick him up and start him versus the Mariners next, because the schedule gets even easier as he follows that start up with two straight against Toronto. So go pick up Ryan Weathers. But if you'd like a breakdown of every single start from Tuesday, give the Plus Pitch podcast a listen and check out Nick's daily SP roundup over on pitcherlist.com. Now we'll head to the bullpen and check out the relievers that got saves and the closers that pitched outside of save situations or blew their saves. Starting with the former, Yennier Cano recorded his second save with a scoreless ninth, and I feel like he's probably going to be the favorite for saves in Baltimore with Tyler Wells now in Tampa Bay, as Cano signed an extension and now has his arbitration price locked in. Emilio Pagan recorded his 12th save with a scoreless ninth. David Bednar had a hitless four-out save for his 25th save of the year. Brian Bayo had a perfect three-inning save, his first of the year. Trevor McGill recorded his 19th save with a perfect ninth. And Brian Baker recorded his MLB-leading 32nd save with a perfect 11th inning. In terms of closers to pitch outside of save situations or blow their saves, Jacob Latz allowed two runs, one of which was earned in the ninth inning to blow his third save, but he earned his third win when the Rangers walked it off against Dylan Smith, who pitched the ninth inning in a tie game and allowed the Rangers to walk it off to take his fourth loss. It wasn't really completely his fault. Jung-Hoo Lee misplayed a ball in the outfield that allowed the Rangers to walk it off, and I think that Smith's usage here in the tie game in the ninth inning is an indicator of the Giants' preferred late inning usage with so many relievers now gone. Eric Miller and Caleb Killian, who were the top options for saves throughout the season for the Giants. I think Dylan Smith is your best bet for saves moving forward. On the other side of the Bay, Hogan Harris allowed two runs in the eighth inning to blow his fifth save and take his first loss. Elvis Alvarado recorded the final out of that eighth inning. Raisel Iglesias allowed two runs pitching the ninth inning with a four-run lead after the Braves tacked on an insurance run in the eighth to ruin Iglesias' save chance. Edwin Diaz served up a solo shot pitching the eighth in a three-run deficit. He hadn't pitched since last Tuesday, so this was a maintenance outing for Edwin Diaz. Jacob Webb pitched a perfect ninth inning up by four after the Cubs tacked on an insurance run in the eighth to ruin his save chance. And lastly, Jordan Romano allowed two runs in the ninth inning to blow his third save. The Rockies would go on to lose that one in 11 innings. But if you'd like more information on relief pitchers, check out Rick Graham's daily articles over on pitcherlist.com and give a listen to the In the Pen podcast, where Rick and I broke down every single trade that involved a reliever from the past week leading up to the trade deadline. And before we look forward to today's games, we're going to take a quick break. Now we'll look forward to Wednesday, August 5th, a day in which we'll have a full slate of 15 games. My matchup of the day is Paul Skeens versus Kyle Harrison. We've got an intra-division matchup, and I would love to see Skeens bounce back. I'm really curious to see how he looks here. I am also curious to see how Harrison looks in his return from the injured list. Paul Skeens versus Kyle Harrison, matchup of the day. In terms of probable starters, we've got four guys in the auto starts tier, including Skeens. We've also got Sean Burke in Boston, Brian Wu versus the Tigers, and Eury Pérez in Atlanta. Our probably starts tier has five guys, and a questionable starts tier has seven, and that's where we'll find our streamer of the day in Eric Lauer on the north side of Chicago. Lauer is not somebody that you're trusting for ratios or strikeouts, but he is somebody that can get you a win or a quality start, and pitching for the Dodgers, you got a pretty good shot at doing that. I'd also keep an eye out for Noah Cameron versus the Twins. That lineup is a little bit compromised right now with Byron Buxton on the IL, and Cameron has proven a little bit volatile, but he has also proven to have a high ceiling. I think that's back-to-back successful starts for him with plenty of strikeouts. So I'm trusting Noah Cameron versus the Twins. If you're looking for a pitcher with an opener, Ty Madden will have an opener in Seattle, though he's not somebody that I trust often with my fantasy team. In terms of hitter suggestions, I target Giants hitters versus Cody Bradford in Globe Life Field, as Bradford is pitching in his return from Tommy John surgery. I'd also target Rays and Rockies hitters in Coors Field, as Nick Martinez will square off against Tomoyuki Sugano in that one. And lastly, I'll target A's and Reds hitters in Great American Ballpark. We'll see Jacob Lopez square off against Rhett Lauder in that one. And now we'll close things out with our relievers to watch. Every closer should be available once again on Wednesday, so just set your lineup as usual. But that'll do it for today's episode of the First Pitch Podcast. Make sure to head on over to pitcherlist.com to check out all of the great articles and features we have on the site. Sign up for PL Plus or PL Pro to gain access to the Discord and to support the Pitcher List staff. You can follow me on socials at Jake Crumpler. Tune into YouTube tomorrow and every day for a new installment of the podcast. And make sure to enjoy the day as we are blessed with another day of baseball.
This has been the First Pitch Podcast, brought to you by PitcherList.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at PitcherList, and help support what we do by joining our Discord with PitcherList Plus at PitcherList.com/plus.